just like to address one point briefly, if that's okay with you, the case of the issue that you have in this. My name is Aaron. I'm the president of Campus Activists for Atheism.
I'm Chris Burns. I'm the secretary of Campus Activists for Atheism.
And we're atheists, and we do exist. I'll get more into defining what atheism means in a moment. I will turn it over to Christopher to go over factual disproofs of Christianity.
Well, it's interesting that you use scripture a lot because the path has been long corrupted over the thousands of years, either willfully or just because of the common human error. Okay, I'll address the human error, and Aaron will take over for willful. All right. Well, early on, the scribes. Up until about the 3rd and 4th century, the scribes were illiterate. They were uneducated. Well, how can your job, that people are so reliant on you to do a good job, how is your job to write and you're illiterate? Well, that's easy. These people, they just copy it. They just copy it and they do that all day for however long it takes to make that certain copy of the New Testament or the Hebrew Old Testament. The scribes, one of the tools that they would use is scriptum continuum. Latin, I know, big word. It means just continuous script. So for an entire page, for an entire manuscript, they wrote nonstop. No line breaks, no paragraphs, none of that. No commas, no periods. I'll digress later and discuss some of the scribes that were illiterate. And during that time in the 3rd and 4th century, Paul, he was commonly known to dictate. So one word, like in our English language, your, how would you write that? You know, if I mean you are as opposed to your being possessive, then how do you understand? How does the actual scribe understand which your, let's say, is to be used? Bart Ehrman, world-renowned biblical scholar, okay? He teaches out east. I can't remember. I should have wrote that down. But anyways, he had made the, and it's accepted in the scholarly world, he made the claim that there are many versions or variations in the New Testament, as there are words in the New Testament. And I'll address that later also. I'll go into that now. Why don't we? Well, that happened because due to the scribes had their own style due to the location. So the Roman scribe was, because of locale, had a different style than as opposed to the gentleman who copied in Ephesus than to the guy that copied in Alexandria. So they would each have their own significant style where you would lose maybe translation or the effectiveness of a different type of word. All right, moving on. After the 3rd and 4th century, the church finally decided, well, there's a problem here. We'll start hiring professional scribes. Okay, and I know there's a big gap of time here, but, earlier scribes, Asherian and Pitas, both illiterate, okay, let's say, well, they were. Pitas had unrest, and he was located outside of Alexandria. Pitas had unrest, so he called upon his colleague, Asherian, to come down and settle it, because they were accusing him of being illiterate, right? Well, Asherian comes down and says, Pitas, can you sign your name? Pitas signed his name. And then Asherian proclaimed to the people, he's literate because he can sign his name. Because he can sign his name, that means he's literate? Excuse me, I'm sorry. going later on into Erasmus, he dabbled at a lot. He was another scribe in the 16th century. He was hired by the church, split notice, to create the Greek New Testament. And after about 5 months, yeah, it's a rush. Ah, sorry. Okay, 5 months, they expected him to publish the Greek New Testament. Well, he was quoted for saying, "Precipitatum varius quam editum." Rushed out rather than edited. This is the 16th century, well after 1,000 years of already this transcription. All right, now we'll move on to Aaron.
Thank you very much, Chris. There was a claim that atheists are people who do not believe in God. Fair claim to make. Atheists against theists without a God. Very true. However, simply saying that, well, there's no God, never could be, never will be, no matter what you try to find him as, is simply not the point that an atheist will take. So I will give to you sort of the mantra of an atheist that I wrote out. I don't believe in a personal God who cares or involves itself in my life or the lives of others. And I can live my life under the safe assumption that some sort of natural force that we might mistakenly call God doesn't care if I acknowledge it. Okay. Atheists are not so much saying that there could never be something out there that created the universe, the first cause, etc., etc. That's not the claim of an atheist. It's actually a characterization of an atheist who is simply nihilistic in that sense. An atheist is someone who says the Christian God, so far as you define it, and whatever variation or denomination you define it, the Islamic God, any God of any other religion that has prior existed or still exists. Keep in mind, there have been 10,000 plus gods in human history and human culture. 10,000 plus. I'm simply here to say, well, the Christian gods are not right. Okay. I'm also saying that, you know, Wotan, Thor, Zeus, those gods weren't right either. And in fact, my opposing side will definitely agree. They are atheists in the sense that they don't believe in those gods. I simply go one God further. I do not believe in the Christian God so far as they define it. So what's the deal? Why do atheists care? Why, if I don't believe in it, why am I even up here debating with you? How does it affect me? If you're only looking at your immediate environment, that wouldn't really make sense. Well, nothing's really going on unless, you know, the theology is directly impacting in a physical or psychological or social way. Okay. Need I remind you of September 11th, 2001? What were the motivations behind that event? Was it political? Perhaps. I'm sure there's some politics involved. But who did Osama bin Laden quote in every video he sent back? He quoted the Quran, the Hadith. These are Islamic texts that are against the Christian texts. And when George W. Bush said, "We are on a crusade in Iraq," that was the bloodiest week crusade. There is an innate conflict between religions, because they're claiming that they're right, the other is wrong. And if you look through the text, if you've read the Bible, if you've read the Quran and Hadith, both will say the unbeliever, the infidel, is evil, wicked, and must be killed. Where does it say in the Bible? Try Luke 19:27, the parable of the miners. Okay. Yes, it's a parable. Every parable has a moral of the story, probably around the end. You take an Aesop's fable, there are metaphors. I've been told that, well, you know, there's interpretation for Luke 19:27, which Jesus says, "Bring those who will not have me reign over them and slay them before me." You can look it up if you have a Bible with you. Okay. How can you interpret that otherwise? What's the moral of the story when that comes out? If Aesop's fable said that, how would you interpret that? I would interpret that, if I was literally interpreting that end of the moral of the story, it would say, take non-believers before me and slay them before me. It's a direct interpretation. I don't see any other way. So Christianity has claims, and what do they claim? Well, they claim there's a God, he created you, he cares about you, he involves himself in your life. Okay? He sees you when you're sleeping, he knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. Okay? A bit like Santa Claus. What happens when you're good with Santa Claus? You get a reward. You get presents. What happens if you're bad? You get that love of coal. Okay? This is taken to an extreme in Christianity and other religions. If you're good, you get an eternity of bliss. If you believe what we believe, you get an eternity of bliss. If you do not, you get everlasting torture. And by the way, you don't hear about hell until the New Testament when Jesus comes in. Nowhere in the Old Testament. There is also the issue of original sin. Original sin. When you're born, you're evil. Okay? I can say when you're born, you're bound to make some mistakes. You're bound to do some bad things so far as we classify them as bad. Okay? It's all up to your subjective interpretation of that. But religion says, no. Everyone is wicked. And you needed some guy, a couple of thousand years ago, to get crucified and die on the cross, just like many other people were crucified and died on the cross. You need him to spill his blood to save you. Sorry, I've never met the guy. I don't know exactly that Jesus exists. Sure, Josephus has written about him. Sure, Pliny the Younger has written about Jesus' existence. Does it mean that it's so? Does it mean that he can actually be the Son of God? That's a claim that you just can't verify. You couldn't verify it back then. You can't verify it now. You have to take it on faith. And there's that issue of faith. You need to have faith. Okay? Faith is defined as belief in the absence of evidence. So when my opponents discuss evidence with you, there's an inherent contradiction there. Faith? But you're talking about evidence? Wouldn't that contradict against itself? And there's much more contradictions as well. God fails conceptually. Conceptually, God fails. The Christian God. Okay? What are the claims of God? We have omnipotence, omniscience, omnibenevolence, omnipresence. He's all-knowing. He's all-powerful. He's everywhere. He's all-loving. These are extreme claims. And they somewhat contradict each other. Another claim that Christianity has would be with free will. So here's a contradiction. Okay? If God is all-knowing, he knows everything. So if God created me knowing that I was going to be an atheist, knowing that I was going to dissent, then he created me to go to hell. He knows what I'm going to choose. The free will cannot exist. If you're going to claim that God is all-knowing, you must take the Calvinistic approach of, well, it's predestination, which in and of itself is unfair. It's a bit like being born in North Korea. Does anyone in North Korea choose to be born in North Korea? Did anyone in the United States choose to be born in the United States? Absolutely not. But in North Korea, you can't leave. It's called defecting, and if they catch you, you'll be killed. Okay? How does that relate to Christianity? Well, God created you, according to them. He's involved in your life. He knows about you. He cares about you. So you have to love him. That's the decision you have to make, to love or to not to love. You must appreciate what is given to you. Just like Kim Jong-il and Kim Il-sung, who was dead but still the head of state, says, you must be thankful for what we give you. But they did not choose it. And I personally wouldn't choose it myself. And if the claims of God are true, that I'm being under surveillance 24/7, physical actions, my thoughts, I wouldn't want that to be true. Many people will say, well, you know, if heaven did exist, I'd love it. Heaven is classified in some ways as everlasting praise. To me, that's not my thing. I don't know if it's yours. I'd like to do other things instead of praise 24/7. And if you go to North Korea, that's what it's like. Okay? But as Christopher Hitchens says, and I'll leave out the expletive, at least you can die in North Korea and get out. The claims of Christianity, the claims of the other religion, there is no escape. That right there should say, wait a second. Sounds a bit like a fallacy to me. Sounds a bit like it's just something used to trick me, something used to control me. Why else would there be so many different religions in so many different areas? Why would the Christian God choose to come down a couple of thousand years ago in the middle of Palestine to peasants and preach, while in other areas in the world they had other gods? Why not speak to everyone? Why depend on the Middle East to spread a religion? But the sort of misunderstanding is that Jesus was the only one claiming what he was claiming. Simply not so. Apollonius from Tyene claimed what Jesus Christ claimed, if he did exist. And he was persecuted, crucified and died, but proclaiming that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. Still no evidence. Another point that we have is the moral necessity of atheism. It sounds odd. The moral necessity of atheism? Yeah. One thing that religion does create is in-group mentality. What I think is correct. And if you think my way, you're in the club. You're in heaven. If you don't, you're in everlasting hell. There's other religions out there, mind you, that take Jainism. Sam Harris, author of The End of Faith, talks a lot about Jainism. No harm done. To be more extreme as a Jainist would mean that you're doing less and less harm every day. They don't claim that if you don't believe in what they're going to believe, you're going to go to hell. That's a Christian claim. That's the New Testament. It's necessary, and I might have to plea for the 2 minutes if you so agree. It's necessary to view other people as your equal. We don't judge people, or we view that it's not kosher, if I may use the word, no pun intended, to judge people based on the color of their skin. We judge them on the content of their character. This is not a religious claim. The Bible has been quoted by many people throughout the times when they were trying to abolish slavery as pro-slavery. No, we need to, because God says that we are to own certain people. When God claimed, you know, the story of the fall of the walls of Jericho. I see there are children in the audience. Do you know the story about the falling of the walls of Jericho? They walked around the city, played the trumpets, and the walls fell. What happened after that? I never heard about that in Sunday school. I grew up in the church, Catholic, Pentecostal. What happened was they raped, pillaged, and tortured the people. They exterminated. God apparently said to them, you take what you will, you do what you please, it is holy in the eyes of God. That's not immoral. Okay? My opponent claims that, well, you know, we get our Ten Commandments from God. Okay? So you mean to tell me, and I'm borrowing a bit from Christopher Hitchens here, author of God is Not Great. You mean to tell me that the Israelites wandered the desert. The Egyptians escaping from Egypt, the Jews wandered the desert. And until they reached Mount Sinai, where they got those decrees that, hey, murder's wrong, torture, rape, you know, theft, they thought that it was all good. That's obviously not so. So we're making a case here for human solidarity. How does it come about in evolution? And I hope we get to talk about evolution and such. And how do morals evolve in society and how society functions? Thank you.
Thank you. The first stage was to hear the opening arguments, the case for God, the case against God. In this next phase, there will be a discussion.